We do have on our website, you can go and get past podcasts of what speakers have done, and then if you really love what Susan had to say, or you want your husband to listen to it, or whatever, and of a friend, we will have that on the podcast as well, so that's why we're recording it. But anyway, I got the pleasure of just meeting Susan this morning. This is Susan Golka. She has two kids, two little girls, a 7-year-old and a 4-year-old, and she has actually been to our church before. She's taught along the Love and Logic courses here, and she does that also elsewhere, but I love that she's in the same boat with us and just has some words of wisdom to pass on, and I'm excited. So with that, please come on up. You might have to raise this up just a tiny bit. Okay, I did share with Megan this morning that we are all in the same boat. I do have a 7.5 and a 4-year-old, and have seen a lot of the challenges that are with raising children. And one of the most important things that usually comes up with me is, how do I get my kids to listen when I ask them to do something? So I thought that might be a fun topic to kind of address today. Let me just give you a quick... Yes? Oh, great. Great. That's exactly. I know that feeling. So let me just give you a quick background on myself. I do teach for Northwest Family Services with the Love and Logic program, but I also teach for a Beautiful Marriage Education Center, and I got involved with that even though I have an accounting background, which I know does not always, bode well into the psychology field, but I was trained as a life coach. I gave up accounting and was trained as a personal and business coach, and that got my interest sparked in the whole personal development realm, so to speak. And then I was blessed with children and kind of really started to do a lot of research on what it takes to raise healthy children, what can I learn from my past, what do I want to carry forward, what do I not want to carry forward. So the life coaching and being a mom myself really has kind of led me down this path. And with the Beautiful Marriage Education Center, we focus also on building strong relationships with your spouse, and then how can you create a great family. Okay, so that has kind of led itself to what I'm doing now, which is helping us learn different techniques, different methodologies for what can we do to help our kids be happy and help mom and dad be happy at the same time and build strong families so that these kids can be productive members of society. So thank you for having me here today, and I'm going to talk both from experience and from a little bit of the research, because I do know that the research and the theory can be all well and fine and great, but when you go to apply that with a 4-year-old, sometimes it just doesn't go that smoothly. So please feel free to ask any questions along the way, too. I want to start with a quote that I found that I really love. Children are like wet cement. Whatever falls on them makes an impression. I feel our children are one of the most valuable assets we have, and I also believe that family is a really core place where we can build up and be community, a starting place for community, but also a place for structure, learning, love, and family time. But I want to talk today about what we can do with our words. Okay, words can be something that we can praise, we can encourage, we can say yes, we can say no, but what else can we do with our words?
Tear down.
Tear down, okay. And I know none of us ever intend to do that with our children, but sometimes, when, as I hear some people talking about having 3 children, a baby, one at home sick, was that you? Not to say that you would do this, but there are days like that when it gets tough, and those are the challenging times that we need to learn how to use our language in a positive way so that we can build our kids up and not tear them down. How many of you see that curiosity and that rambunctiousness and that zest for life in your children right now? Okay. So it's such a precious gift that God gives us and gives it in that child. And I think we often learn from those children that they have that zest for life, and we don't want to squash that. Okay. But what do we do to not overindulge them and still allow them to follow our limits and follow our boundaries? Okay, so that's what we're going to talk about today. We need to learn to use our words correctly. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to talk about a couple different avenues. I'm going to talk about proactively what we can do with our kids. I'm going to actually talk about better language to use with setting boundaries and limits. And then we're also going to talk a piece about feelings and what you can do with your kids as they develop to help them be a little more in touch with how they feel about things so that they're not acting out and reacting to things. So most of you know that praise is a really positive thing, yes? And how many of you praise your kids? Okay. Now, what do you think is happening in this day and age with praising our kids? Or what can happen? Sorry?
They puff up.
They puff up? Okay, too much praise. Okay, so we can say encouraging words and we can say positive things to our kids, but we do want to be careful. We want to be careful that we're being genuine, that we're being honest, and it really is a time and a place for that type of praise. One of the things that I like to tell people, and I try to use this myself, is try to use descriptive language. Okay, it's not just, hey, you're doing a great job, or oh, that's fantastic. Well, what is it about your child, and what is he doing that is fantastic? And what does that do for your child then? He wants to repeat the behavior, and it also is solidifying things in his head. So I'm going to talk a lot today about you using descriptive words with your kids so that not only are they internalizing what's going on and they're learning, they're also, it's a brain thing too. They're developing synapses all along the way that are making these connections for feelings, for even motor skills and that type of thing. So if you are describing what they're doing, that they're doing a good job with, that's going to help internalize that. What about labeling? When we're praising, we don't want to label, and I keep knocking over. I love microphones. I usually walk around a little bit. We don't want to be labeling as good or bad when we're doing praising as well. So if you're saying something like, wow, you did a really great job cleaning up your room. What a good girl you are. Okay, is that something we want to do? No, and because we don't want to be labeling the person. We don't want to be labeling the child as good or bad. So a better way to say something like that is, it looks like a lot of work has been done in your room today. The toys are put away and the covers are over your bed. And look at that. So it doesn't mean that everything is perfect in the room. Because if you say, wow, you're such a good girl, you cleaned up your room, what if they're thinking in their head, oh gosh, I really stuffed something under the bed, so I must not be a good girl, I'm really a bad girl. Okay, so those are the kind of things that start to go on in their head. So we just want to be descriptive and describing the positive things that are happening. Okay, and avoiding praise that refers to a weakness. How many of us sometimes want to encourage our child to do a little bit better? So we'll say to them, wow, you're doing so much better than you did yesterday. Okay, do you see how that's kind of deflating? It's like, well, gosh, I didn't realize I did so bad yesterday. What is she thinking really of what I'm doing today? Because tomorrow she's going to say, well, today really wasn't that great. Okay? So it's simple to just say what's going on today, not do comparisons. And I hate to say this, but sometimes the dads are guilty of this. Okay? Because they're trying to encourage and they're trying to push ahead. Let's say your little one's out there playing soccer. Oh, you're finally kicking the ball. It's like, oh, well, what was I doing wrong yesterday? Again, all these things happening internally. Okay, so that's just a little bit about praise and encouragement. Encouragement is important because, and I see this on the soccer field as well, and I know some of you might have little ones, so we might not be out on the soccer field yet, but encouragement is something that a child needs to know that you believe in them. And I think if we can use those specific words with a child, not to just say, oh, I know you might be scared, but I know you can do it. Okay? Or you drop them at preschool and they're having a hard time, and you say, I know you can do this. I lived in Holland for a while, and I saw a mom that was just, she was a Czechoslovakian woman, and she just had this strength about her. And I saw the way she interacted with her girl, and she relayed that strength to her, and she said, I know you can do this today, and you are a brave girl, and I have the utmost confidence in you. And that girl would walk in with her shoulders back, and she was ready to go for the day. And I'm not saying that that will work with every child. So you have to know the temperament of your child, but knowing that they need that encouragement, and especially we'll get into acknowledging the feelings part. I know you might be scared, okay, so that's a piece we're going to talk about too. But then offering that encouragement for them, okay? And we've talked a little bit about then what does it take if we go, what happens if we go overboard? Because that's the piece that we're getting into in society today. We're not coming off of a depression. We're not coming off of a local war, okay? So we're not living in poverty times like our grandparents may have, okay? It's a kind of a different time. So things are readily available to us. So I think that kids start to see that I have these things around me. I don't have, I mean, very fortunately, we don't have, you know, neighborhoods in war, okay? And being scared to go outside, okay? So we really are raising kids in a time where there are a lot of good things going on. So they may have a tendency, and we may have a tendency as we get older and raise our little ones to overindulge them without even realizing it. Yes, I want you to have this. Yes, I'm praising you all the time. And is that realistic to do for our kids? Okay, so we just want to temper that balance. Be encouraging, but really find that balance. Another positive use of words that has to do with describing is mirroring a child's experience. Now, what do you think I mean by mirroring a child's experience? We're using our words to mirror their experience. Okay, what that is it's describing again. It's reflecting for them. And it could be as simple as you're at the museum, and many of you might already do this very naturally. You're at the museum and you say, wow, it looks like you really have an interest in that T-Rex up there. He's the one with the short little arms and the gnashy teeth. Okay, again, it's the describing. It's mirroring what they're seeing. And then that opens them up to say, yeah, he just looks so fierce, and look how long his tail is. Again, he's internalizing the experience instead of just going through and, yeah, that's nice, and, yeah, that's great. Okay, so it, not only is it building intelligence, but it's getting them aware of what they like, what they don't like. So again, you're describing what you see for them, and you can even ask them, what do you see that you like or enjoy? Okay? Or what about when they're having conflict with a friend? I see you're having trouble with that friend today. You were upset because he took a turn in front of you. Okay, you're just mirroring what's happening. So they're not standing there feeling, gosh, what did I do wrong? What is it about me that he wants to do that or do this? Okay? So you're helping them internalize that. Okay? You look like you were angry when your friend took your toy away. Okay, mirroring their experience and talking to them about it. Okay, and again, this is all on the proactive side. And we'll talk about the boundaries and the limit setting when we want our kids to listen to us. But this is on the proactive side. Other things that can bring cooperation with our child. We want our kids to do at times what we need them to do, right? We need to get out of the house in the morning. We need to get them to the grocery store to get the whole milk. What do we do to bring cooperation? And this fits along with the praise and encouragement. We start with empathy. Okay, every book that I've read that's good as far as parenting, and you'll hear this in the Love and Logic if any of you went to the Love and Logic seminar, is empathy is a key piece. To feel that you are on the same side with your child. Okay, not in every situation that they see, but you want to start from that side. And that has to do with mirroring their experience and describing it. But we inadvertently say things like, if they get upset, oh, you'll be fine, you'll be fine. It's okay, it's okay. Okay, is that what they need to hear? No. Okay, and sometimes we are in a rush and we need to say, and I've caught myself saying it too, I don't have time to worry about that, we just need to get moving. Okay, and it's not to say that you know, that's okay too, but we also really want to take the time to say, you know what, Mommy's been rushing you. I'm really sorry. Let's take it slow, and maybe tomorrow morning I'll take an extra 5 minutes to get us going so that we don't have to rush. So I'm having empathy for my child's experience. Okay? Does that make sense? And then you're on the same side of the fence. And that's going to bring cooperation next time. I just did it with my 7.5-year-old in that exact situation. She's, Mom, you're rushing. I'm like, come on, I've got to get out the door. I told you. So this is where I take what I'm preaching and I bring it back to my own life. And I say, okay, that's what we need to do. We need to take 5 extra minutes in the morning, make sure the TV is off, make sure that we get this done, so that we don't have to rush out the door. My daughter's like, oh, thanks, Mom. Okay? So now when kids are little, you have to kind of tailor that down a little. I know it seems like we're rushing today, and I'm really sorry, but Mommy got running a little bit late, or the baby decided to spit up on their shirt. Not decided, but did spit up on their shirt, so we're going to be a little more rushed, and I'm sorry we have to do that, but can we get moving a little bit quicker? Okay, so you're empathizing with them, getting on the same side of the fence. What about saying something like, I would be really disappointed if that happened to me too? Okay, again, you're acknowledging feelings and you're getting on the same side of the fence. Okay, how many of you feel like you kind of do this with your kids already? See a few faces like, ooh, I wish I did. Okay, so that's good though, because that's a nugget that you can take with you and practice. What about something, and this is something you might want to share with the dads, and I always think dad sports, not that we're not the coaches as well, but how about your daughter or son has twisted their ankle on the soccer field, okay? How about we take a break here until your ankle feels better? Then I know you'll give it your all when you go back in. Now, where's the empathy piece? It's not saying, oh, you just need to toughen up. Okay, it's, I see that your ankle hurts. Let's take a break. You're empathizing. You're on the same side of the fence. But I know once you get back in there, you're going to do great. That's the encouragement piece. Okay? Something simple like, oh, I really know those toys. Oh, they're struggling to open it. I really know those toys are hard to open. Do you want to know what I try? Okay, it's not telling. This is how you need to do it. Okay? And if you need help, let me know. And then is that child going to feel good if they did get it open, even though you offered a couple suggestions of how they might do it? Okay? They're going to have tried. Okay? And validating. Validating is another piece. That was a really tough decision, but you made a good choice. How many of us give our kids choices? You guys give your kids choices? Okay, good. Now, do we give our kids choices of how they can behave? You can. You can give them choices. You can choose to do this and stay here with me, or you can choose to go down to your room or upstairs to your room. I know you'll make a good decision. And let them decide, because they're doing the thinking. And then you're validating them, because you're saying, then let's say they decide to stay down with you and they're quiet and they're doing what you ask them to do, then you're validating them for making a good choice. Good choice. I'm very proud of you. Okay. What about validating our little, anyone have a singer child? Child that just loves to sing. I have one of those. What would a validating statement be for her? Girl? Boy? Girl?
Girl.
Girls. Okay.
Are you trying to curb the singing?
No.
Okay.
Well, if we're validating, no. We're not onto the boundaries and limits setting yet, so we'll do that piece in a little bit.
Well, can I just be this encouragement? Like, oh, you know, you have a very pretty voice, or wow, God has really blessed you with...
Yes.
A desire to sing.
Exactly. God has really blessed you. Well, and the thing of it is what every moment is. We might have to let go of the sarcastic part. But I totally get what you're saying. I love the one that you said, God has really blessed you with a desire to sing. It doesn't put any judgment on it, does it? It doesn't put any of our irritation on it, does it? And I'm totally with you, because I'm there. My second daughter will sing from the time she gets up in the morning till the time she goes to bed. She'll sing, Mom, can you get me a juice? I'm like, okay. So she loves it, and she does these intonations, and she's really into it. And so to say, wow, God has really given you a gift and a desire to sing. Because we may not want to say they have a beautiful voice or not, because maybe we don't know yet, or maybe they don't. So we're just validating who they are. Because you never know if that little girl or little boy may be a singer someday. Okay? Now, we'll get to limits and boundaries, because there might also be times and places that they need to sing. Okay? Or not sing. Yes. That's where I'm getting. Because I had to set that up for myself, too. At the dinner table. Getting a little crazy. So, okay, so validating. And here's what's great for you guys, is I know you probably have kids here all the way from, some are still in utero, but babies all the way, what, to 5, 6, 7 years old? So 10? Okay, so we have quite a range here. But we can start validating a child right from the very beginning. We can start with, Sophie likes to sing at age 3, okay? You have a wonderful voice and a desire to sing, okay? What about at age 6 when Sophie doesn't really love reading but loves recess? What's a validating statement for her? She's not really liking her reading, but recess is her favorite subject. That's my 7-year-old. So I may say something like, well, Sophie, you really love to be with your friends and you enjoy running around on the playground. Okay, that's validating because it's showing I'm not focusing on the reading. And again, if it's a problem and it's an issue that needs to be addressed, great, a separate time and a separate place. But I want to acknowledge her for what she is liking and she is enjoying, which is being with her friends and running around and playing. I say that to my 7-year-old because literally she says, my favorite subject is recess. And my husband and I love school, and he's a math major, and I love math, and I'm thinking, math should be your favorite subject. Okay, but that's my feeling. Okay, so I have to learn to validate her for who she is. Maybe she's going to become a socialite. Okay, maybe that's going to be her thing. Maybe it's not going to be math. Maybe it's going to be something else. So I'm going to acknowledge what I see in her. Okay, at age 8, maybe she is having trouble with math at school. We could say something like, I know math is really difficult, but you're really good at setting up the problems. I see that piece, how you write it all out. You're doing really good with that. Do you want some help with actually solving the problem? I can help you do that piece. So I'm validating the steps that she is able to do. Do you think she feels good then about trying out those math problems then, even though she's struggling with it? Okay, because I'm going to find that one piece that she does really well. Oh, wow, you're really good at getting everything set up for your homework. Okay, let me sit down with you and see what I can help you do. Okay, so each step of the way, there's a piece of validating. Now, there's a difference between validating and labeling. You don't want to label a child, especially as they're growing and changing. Okay, if I start to label my daughter as a singer, okay, that's not necessarily a bad thing, but what if she changes her mind later on? What if she decides, you know, I heard myself sing, and I'm not so good, but mom thinks I'm going to be a singer. Okay, so we want to be careful about that. So we may want to either acknowledge other things that we see are developing, but not box them in. Okay, and labeling can mean something even like, oh, you're so messy, even if you're saying it in a cute way. Oh, your room's just a mess. You're just a messy girl, you know, or it could even be softer than that. Wow, you take a long time to get your shoes on, silly. Okay, but we're labeling by doing that. Okay, and we want to try to avoid labeling and boxing in. Okay, I think that's what's key about watching each stage of development, because you're going to see something totally new each 6 months or each year that you can find. Wow, I didn't realize that you've become so articulate in this, or I didn't realize that you were going to be a sports person, an athlete. Okay. So let's talk really fast. I don't want to take too long. I talked about choices, or you guys talked about already offering choices for your kids, and I think that's a really important thing that a lot of moms nowadays are really good at. Do you want to wear the green pants or the blue ones so that they feel like they're sharing in some of the power and control? How many of you think that you're, how many of you have 3 or 4 year olds? Anyone's child interested in having control? Okay. It's pretty much a given at that stage of development. So that's why choices are important, because it helps them to feel like they have a piece of control. So what you do is you kind of set the boundary around what that is. Maybe it's a day where they have to wear pants, so you offer the 2 pairs of pants. You don't offer the dress. Okay, so they're not going to go out and skin their knees or whatever that might look like. If you're going to offer juice or milk, be ready that it's okay to offer juice. That if they choose juice, that's fine. If you're not a juice family, you can have water or milk and let them choose there. So you see how you're setting the guidelines for the choices? Okay, and as they get older, go ahead. Yes, I love the love and logic one that says, would you like to take your clothes in a bag or would you like to have them on your body? Would you like to go? Now, some kids, especially in that 3, 4 year old age, will say, well, I want to take them in a bag. And you have to be okay with that. Okay? Or, are you going to go to school in your pajamas today? And they'll go, cool. So you have to be willing. Okay, and that's the thing with choices. I was just going to go through a couple rules. Number one, if they don't choose, you have to choose for them. Number two, you have to be willing to do whatever it is that those choices bring. Okay, so if you say, do you want to go in your pajamas because it's time to get in the car? And if they say yes, you have to be okay with that. And believe me, there probably every preschool out there has seen a kid come in their pajamas because mom has learned love and logic. And they're not going to think you're off your rocker, okay? They're going to know that you're trying to teach them a lesson, okay? Other things might be something like setting a timer, okay? That's not necessarily offering a choice, but it's saying, let's see if we can get dressed so fast, or let's see if we can get everything ready by the time the timer goes off. Okay, so making it fun, making it encouraging.
Can that kind of be a choice? You can choose to get in the car before the timer goes off?
Yes.
Or you can choose to have the consequence that comes with the timer going off before.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Is that considered a choice?
Absolutely. You can choose to have all of this ready. Or, you know, it depends on how old the kid is, because sometimes you have to help them get their shoes on. You have to help them. But let's see if we can do it by the timer. Otherwise, we go without shoes, without the coat, in the pajamas, that type of thing. Exactly. See, that's the thing. You have to be willing to live with the consequence. But sometimes those consequences do play out. I let my 7-year-old, as much as I wanted to save her on this one, go to school without her snack. Okay, she was 6. It was last year. And I'm just thinking, oh, she's going to be hungry. She's going to be... But I had to let her do that because I was reminding all the time. So it was either you can, you know, do this yourself, and I put a list on the door, or you can end up learning the hard way. Do you think she remembered her snack the next day? Yeah, because she learned from the consequence. Okay, not from me telling. The first time I did it, she said, but Mom, you didn't tell me. You didn't tell me I had to get a snack. Okay, so she wanted me to stay in that mode of telling, but is she learning that way? That's the key. Okay, so let's talk about boundaries and limits so I don't get too late without being able to cover that piece. I think with boundaries and limits, when we want our children to do what we need them to do, okay, and, okay, first we want to make sure that we're using the right language. Okay, we're talking about words, we're talking about talking so our kids will listen. The most important thing that I saw myself do and I see other parents do is not know what the boundary is. Okay? So we don't have to make it complicated for ourselves, we can split it into two categories. What is acceptable behavior and what is not acceptable behavior. And I encourage you to write things down if you're starting to get confused yourself. And it's not that I am knocking anyone's intelligence whatsoever, because I had to do this for myself, because I had two kids of two very different ages who needed different boundaries. So I had to get, and I was starting to mix them up. I was starting to let the four-year-old do a lot of what the seven-year-old was doing and realizing, okay, that's not working. So I had to get clear on, for Rachel's age, my seven-year-old, what is appropriate and not appropriate behavior. And some of them will overlap, obviously. And for my four-year-old, what is appropriate and not appropriate behavior. So once I get clear on those things, do you think I'm going to be able to better communicate that to them? Okay? Because sometimes we may say, okay, no snacks before dinner, but one day we give in. Or no candy in the afternoon, but one day we give in. Okay, are we setting any kind of limit there? Not really, because we're not being consistent. Okay, so if you're going to set a boundary and you're going to set a limit, make sure it's something that you really want. Okay, so that we're not saying no, 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 no all day long, but we're making sure that that is a boundary that's important. We do not, if we play outside, we do not go in the street, period. Okay, that's a limit and a boundary. The way of phrasing it, the new language that I think is really powerful, is to say, you can play outside as long as you don't step foot in the street. So that means you can play in the yard, you can play in the backyard, you can play in the driveway. But if you ever see that child put a toe over, okay, because they may try that. They may even, you know, jump into the street and say, let's see what mom's going to do. You have to be on that one. Okay? And maybe those first few times you're out there with them, or depending on the age, you know whether you need to be out there with them. So I'm thinking of my street and my yard, which is very short, and there's a lot of traffic that comes. Okay? So the wording that we're using is, you can do this if you do that. Okay? So it's more positive because you're allowing permission if they follow the rule. Okay, let me give you another example. Feel free to keep the toys that you pick up. Is that a good one? I love that one. Okay? I'm setting the timer. We have 5 minutes to go through the living room. Feel free to keep the toys that you clean up. Okay? And then when the timer goes off, mom goes through, oh, missed this one, oh, missed that one. Okay, and what do I do with those toys? Every parent has a different level of carrying this one through. I like to just put them up and put them away for a while. I've heard parents write into the trash, into the garage, and if they don't miss them, they go away. I've heard parents of older kids, oh, iPod left out. Make some money on eBay here. Okay, so it just depends on what level you want to take it to, okay? But your kids will learn then. Now, I'm also considering the fact that, okay, I'm setting the timer. Most of us have younger kids, so I'm giving them a chance. I'm not just randomly walking through the house and saying, I'm going to trash all these toys or put them away. I'm actually giving my kids a chance so they get into that habit. And then maybe 2 years down the road, it's, okay, this is what the living room needs to look like. You guys have a playroom. All the stuff can be left down there, okay? But this area up here needs to stay clean, okay? Those kids who behave in the store this week get to enjoy our movie night on Friday. Okay, so you have a couple errands to run, and you simply state it. And you may have to state it over a few times till they get used to this new way of wording, because it's kind of concise. It's not like mom's normal way of like, if you don't stop, and da 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 da, and then, oh yeah. Okay, which we've all got ourselves caught into before. If you don't stop it right now, okay, you need to go sit over there. Okay, that's not working. Okay, we're going to, next time, I'm not bringing you to the store. Okay, we get into that. Okay? So those kids who behave in the store, or, you know, if they're younger, those kids who behave in the store can sit and watch a short video when we get home, or whatever that may be for you. It might have to be a shorter time frame. Little ones can't always wait till the end of the week. They forget. So they need to wait at the end of the hour, maybe at the end of the shopping trip, or at the end of the day. You want to keep it shorter depending on how old your child is. You know, for older kids, it's those kids who complete their homework get to have movie night on Friday night. Okay, but you see the way of phrasing it? Okay. How about whining? I'll be willing to talk to you when your voice sounds like mine. And then you walk away. And they keep up the whining. Don't hear it. Or, oh, that's hurting my ears. You can always do that one. Okay. Fighting amongst siblings. Feel free to stay upstairs after you've resolved that. I'm sorry, I say upstairs and downstairs because all of our bedrooms and everything are downstairs, so you guys might have opposite houses. But feel free to stay here in the kitchen with me after the argument is over. And they'll either go, I don't want to argue, or if they keep doing it, please take that downstairs and you can come back up or come back down when your argument is over. Okay? Is mom getting angry? So I know what the boundary is. Some of you may be okay with lots of noise. I'm not always okay with lots of noise in the house. If it gets too out of control, I do noise at the park, I do noise at the swimming pool, I don't always do noise during making dinner, you know, especially if it's this back and forth at each other, okay? Feel free that if you guys are gonna play nicely together, stay together. Otherwise, why don't you separate? Okay, those are...
Not a fight, even if it's not... unnecessarily in arguing if it's just way too loud and you've got them.
Yeah. Why don't you, feel free to stay here if you can keep the volume down. If not, why don't you go play up in your rooms or go play in the playroom or go play in the backyard. Yeah. And I think it's really powerful because number one, we're clear on the boundary. We're saying it very clearly. Number two, they know what the consequence is. You know how you can follow through immediately. And they know what the limits are. It's just, and you stay calm. And I think that's a really powerful way of communicating. So at first, when I was first starting to do this, and sometimes when I come back to it, I have to actually like write a few of those down because I was one of those parents who explained and lectured and reminded, and I found myself being exhausted all the time. And when I was teaching one of my love and logic classes, a gal said, I had four kids, it would always get so loud at the table. And she's like, this last week I was so much calmer because I said, feel free to stay at the table if you just keep your voices down a little bit. Or feel free to continue fighting. She actually let her kids like kind of fight and discuss, and she had some older kids. Feel free to do the fighting, just keep the volume down. And she was fine with that. So you have to set the boundary for what it is for you. Pick your battles wisely, though. That's why I say get to know what your boundaries are. Know what is appropriate and what is not, because the battles that you pick, you need to win. Okay? If you're going to say something and give in, if you're going to set the boundary but then give in, you're going to have no credibility. Okay, and I was doing that. I was doing that with both my kids. Please be quiet. Please be quiet. Come on, you guys. Oh, okay. Okay, one more time. And then you're going to have to go to your rooms. My four-year-old was like, who's talking in the background? I mean, I could just tell. She was totally ignoring me. I was setting no limit. I was just kind of yapping at her. Telling her, kind of reminding, threatening, but never following through. But once I started using this, then it was like, this is what's going to happen if you don't do this, and then I have to be willing to follow that all the way through. Okay? All right, let's see. We're talking about phrasing in the positive, okay? And I'm going to just give you a few more examples. Yes, you may go to the pool after your homework is finished. Or yes, you may go outside. Or yes, you may watch a program after your homework is finished. Feel free to go play as soon as your room is clean. Okay, that might be for someone a little bit older. I know little kids need a little more help with those type of things. Kids who brush their teeth can have treats and desserts. Okay, that's something you can say at night right before they go to bed and it's time to brush teeth and they're saying, I don't want to. Well, kids who brush their teeth and take really good care of them can have treats on the next days because I know that their teeth are staying clean. Okay. We talked about kids who behave get to go to the store with mommy. We can talk when your voice is as calm as mine. You may eat what is served or wait until the next meal. That's a pretty powerful one. How many of you have trouble with, I don't like that and I'm not eating, and then you end up making something different for that child? Okay, again, I found myself in that. This one wants this, this one wants this, hubby needs this, and I need a salad. So I'm making, you know, all these different meals, and finally I said, you know what, this one's going to work. I found a few key recipes that everyone likes, and this is what we're having. Okay, and I talked to my pediatrician so that I made sure, because my oldest daughter, she's really thin, and I was thinking, oh, if she skips a meal, that's not so good. You know, my pediatrician says she's not going to starve if she misses a meal. So I just had to feel confident that I wasn't being cruel and unusual. Yeah?
Do you ever prepare meals that you know your kids don't like, or you're preparing them?
I do.
Then I give them a choice of what they want to make.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
I do that so I know that, like, okay, because my kids literally would say, I want nuggets every night. I mean, they literally would. So I try to intersperse, like, you know, last night I made this Mexican dish for my husband and I, and my girls don't like the spicy. So I already knew that last night was a choice where you can have a hot dog, a hamburger, or nuggets. And so they get their choice of their favorite foods, and we have ours. Tonight, I'll probably make something then that everybody needs to eat. So it's kind of interspersed.
So. What was that line?
The one I read about, you may eat what is served or wait until the next meal is served. Love that. I was like, wow, that sounds so simple. I've been making it so complicated. Okay. Now, really quick, how much time do we have? Because I feel like I'm taking up a lot.
You have about 10 more minutes.
Yeah? Okay. And then I'll also try to incorporate questions.
Question time, and then...
Okay.
Yeah, so that's great. You have a moment.
Okay. Really quick, if your kids start to argue with you, a good way to diffuse... I have your producer's pencil. Hold on. Okay. I love this one. I love you too much to argue. But Mom, she didn't... I love you too much to argue. And you keep repeating it. And then they get bored. The fact that you're just repeating the same thing over and over.
Now, would argue be the same as negotiating? Or is that two different things?
Or you could just say, I don't negotiate. Unless you are willing to negotiate. But I think when kids are young, I mean, I see my kids start to get, negotiating is a slippery slope. Yeah. That's why I say it's almost like maybe that's something that they can learn to do as they get older. And maybe when they're young, you know, 5, 6 and younger, it's, I offer you choices, but Mom and Dad make the final decision. Okay, so because negotiating, again, it's like, what if you have a fairly loose schedule for 2 days and you're at the park and they say, just 5 more minutes, and you're like, okay, and okay, Mom needs to go to the store. Again, found myself in this situation. No, I don't want to go. Okay, well, maybe I'll go tomorrow then. So I'm kind of letting them negotiate these different things, and one day I run out of milk first thing in the morning and I need to go right now, and they're going, well, you know, now's not really a good time. Mom. You know, and then they decide that they want to negotiate that one, but there's no room at that moment for negotiation. So I kind of feel like when they're younger that you offer choices, but you're still the one that's kind of in control of the bigger boundaries, so that when you have to go do something and you're not able to negotiate, it's, this is what's happening. Okay, and I think that makes things easier. And then as I get older, you know, let's say my daughter wants to, you know, have a sleepover with someone, and then she's negotiating what time they can stay up till. Maybe that's something, because she's getting older, I'm going to say, okay, well, let's talk about it. And we talk about it together. and it's still mom has the final decision, but you're willing to take their input. But I think when you get into that before age 5-ish, it's kind of a slippery slope. Because then I've noticed that. They just want to negotiate everything, okay? And then they start to feel like they're in control, okay? So they have control over some choices, but you are the parent, okay? And you have the guardrails, okay? That's what you're setting up for your kids. They can choose within those, and if they keep trying to choose something out of those guardrails, not gonna happen, okay? I've also found with the negotiating that even with my 7-year-old, as they get smarter and they start thinking things through, and then they're, but mom, I just want to explain that this is the this. No. You know, because then you get into these discussions about everything. So, okay. And some of this fits along with not always having to tell your child what to do. Okay, we're setting limits and boundaries, but the choice piece allows them to do some choosing. And you want to use words also that are getting them to think a little bit for themselves. So we have the boundaries, but otherwise, if it's something that's not fitting into a specific boundary, like let's say your son comes home and he says, you know, Johnny at school today, like, threw somebody's jacket over the fence. And so it's not something that you have to set a limit around, but you want to start to get them thinking. So you're going to say, well, what would you have done in that situation? Or maybe you find out first what happened. What would you have done in that situation? How would you have handled it? And then really powerful words, instead of saying, I hope you never do that, and that's a rule that we don't do that type of thing, and da-da-da, you're telling and firing at them. Instead of firing at them, say, what would you do? What if you get the, I don't know. Oh, come on, tell me what you think. I don't know. You say, would you like to hear what some other kids have tried? Okay, so when you're trying to get their cooperation and their input, would you like to hear what some other kids have tried? Okay, and that builds that cooperation and it gets them thinking. Okay. Any questions on boundaries and limits in that language? Because I'm going to talk real briefly about the feelings piece.
Yeah. What happens if you've entered into a situation where you've, like, it's just one, like negotiating. If you say, she says, I don't want this pen. Okay, well now, because her reaction, you can't back out and go, okay, I'll get you a new one. You've already entered into the, This is now a battle.
Okay. Then you decide, is that a battle you need to win?
Okay.
Is it safety? Is it character? Is it one of your, like, top important issues?
Is there times that you can get into that and backtrack and say, you know, you're right. Mommy really didn't think this one through. Mm-hmm. Yes, you can do this.
I think that kind of...
entered into a, wow, I now have to hold my ground because...
Yes.
Here.
Yes.
You as a parent...
Yes.
Tell and go,
yes.
You know what, you're right. This,
yes.
I should have thought more about this.
Yes, absolutely, because I think that way of doing it is much better, because all of us, I have this on paper. Do you think I do every single one of these every single minute of every single day? I'm not perfect at these, so when I flub up, and sometimes I flub up big, I sit down and I talk to my kids and I say, you know, mommy's voice got a little loud on that one. You know, and you kind of pull yourself out of it, but you're talking about it. I think that's the key, is you're discussing it and you're saying, you know, this is what I did wrong and I'm sorry for that, because you're also teaching them by modeling what it is that when you make a mistake, because not all of us are perfect, and mommy didn't realize, maybe let me stop for a moment and I need to think about how I want to handle this situation. Never be afraid to delay what's happening, or delay consequences, or delay a discussion. If it's something that you're stopping to think, and you know what, I really need to think about this for a minute. You need to give mommy 5 minutes, and then I'm going to decide. I got into that with some issues where a friend kept stopping by. Can Rachel have a play date? Can Rachel have a play date? And I'd be like, my whole day was kind of figured out, but I want her to go play, and I'm like, you know what, can you give us 10 minutes, and we'll give you a call. OK? Okay, so I just kind of like gave myself a chance to think, what does my day look like? What kind of mood is Rachel in? Is she extra tired? You know, to really think about those things without making, because I also made quick decisions and then regretted it because I got pulled into situations. So also don't be afraid either to backtrack for a few minutes or take a few minutes just to think about it. Is that kind of answering your question? And if it's something like a pen, you really have to think, okay, is this a battle that I need to win? No. Maybe not, okay? Because then it starts to turn into you having too much control over every little thing that the child does. So you want to save the big issues, okay? The safety, the staying with me in the store, the behavior in restaurants, behavior at church, you know, those type of things. Okay, you changed your mind on the pen? Okay, maybe mommy will get you a different one. If they do it 3 or 4 times, that's another story. Then it's, you know, hey, sweetie, you know where the pens are. Because I've also gotten into that with my 4-year-old. Mom, I need a drink. Mom, I need a fork. Mom, I need a napkin. It's like, okay, hold on a second. Napkins are there, forks are in the drawer, and, you know, placemats are over there. Why don't you help Mama out so that, you know, because you start doing that. I think that's what's hard. When they're babies, you're taking such good care of them that then they start going like this, okay? So you want to slowly teach them to be self-sufficient as well. A couple of answers. Is that great?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Real quick on the feelings piece. The feelings piece, I think, is something that is important for kids, that you're just labeling emotions. Okay, I'm not labeling a child, but labeling emotions so they start to get in touch with those. Okay, this is important because you have to kind of be in touch with yours as well. Like, you know, I'm starting to get a little frustrated because it's getting loud in here. Okay, so you're talking about your feelings. Then you may go into the feel free to stay up here if you can keep the voices down. Okay, so you're teaching them that, okay, mommy's realizing how she feels. She's getting a little upset. Maybe it's a little bit too much right now. So then I'm going to set the boundary. You also want to see and mirror, like I talked before, when they're going through something like that. Wow, I saw you, you know, playing with the boy over there, and I saw you get a little angry. Were you angry because he took the toy, or what happened? And then you ask them, did that make you angry? Okay, so you're giving them some ideas about, I'm feeling angry, and then you can start to discuss, what do I do with that anger? Okay? Because some of us have got into situations where our kids are kind of acting out because they don't quite know how they feel. And that is normal age 3, 4, 5, actually probably all the way to 18. Okay, 38. Sometimes we act out because we haven't been able to say, this is how I feel. Maybe you found that in the frustrations of being a parent and having things, you know, so many things going on at the same time that maybe you've blown up at your husband. Okay, it's the same kind of thing because you don't stop and say, you know what, this is starting to get to be a little bit much. I think I need a 10-minute break. Okay, so what you want to do is be able to do that for yourself. Then you're modeling it for your kids, and you also want to use the language for them as well. I see that you look really happy coming home from school today. You must have had a good day. Okay, little simple comments like that to help them start to get in touch with sad, mad, glad, angry, you know, whatever you may label as the different ones. Don't forget, and this is the last point I'll make on feelings, don't forget fearful. Because kids need to learn. Some people say, I don't want to put ideas in their head about making them afraid. But what I've kind of learned is that if you just label, or if you see them reacting a certain way, ask them, are you scared? Are you fearful of something? You know, when we drop our daughters and sons off at preschool, how many of you had one cry before? Okay, so we acknowledge, I know you're afraid because mommy's going to go bye-bye for a while, but we do the encouragement. I know you can do it. I'm going to be back in just a short time. Okay, but you acknowledge the fear. And let me share a really quick story. I have, okay, so Rachel came back. We lived in Holland from the time she was 10 months until she was 5. So basically, when she was 5, we brought her back, moved back to Oregon, and basically took this child, who knew her whole life in Holland, picked her up and replanted her, right? Okay, so we thought we were doing everything to make sure her transition was great, wonderful. Well, about a month ago, well, probably about 3 months ago, she started really, really reacting severely to any time a special situation would end. I would go take some special time with her. We went to a movie, we went and got our toes done. By the time we were on our drive home, she was crying and sobbing and sobbing and just, and I'm thinking to myself, I just took you to get your toes done. I just took you to do this. You know, we went and saw the movie, we had all this special time. What's wrong? And she was going on about it wasn't long enough and it wasn't, and I'm thinking, well, didn't you have fun? Well, it's not long enough and we're never going to get to do it again and da-da-da-da-da. And this was happening. She'd go spend time with her grandma and she'd come back and she'd be in tears and she'd be fighting with her sister and all of this. And I never put it together, but I talked to a psychologist friend of mine and he said, has there been anything in her past that was a really tough transition for her? And I was like, ding, 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 thinking it's been 3 years already. We must have gotten through it. But I said, we came back from Holland. And I said, the very first time she met a friend when we came back here, that night she cried so hard that we had to leave that person's house. And I was trying to explain to her that we can see them again next week. But she didn't understand that. She thought any time an ending happened, it was like being transplanted and you would never get to see that part of your life again. So he said, what you need to do is you need to acknowledge the fear that you must be scared because this is what happened before. You know, you moved all the way over here and you had to leave everything go. You don't get to see your old house. You don't get to see your old friends. So when you end a special situation, are you afraid it's not going to happen again? She said, yeah, I think I am. And it has never happened since. And I was like, I get chills. Because I didn't even realize that. I thought, that's 3 years ago. Okay? And not to say that everybody's got, you know, really traumatic things that happen, but you just never know that if you can tap into the fear, like, are you afraid mom's not going to come back? Okay, well, let me show you today that before the time you have lunch, I'm going to be right here. And that you make sure you're on time and you're there giving them the biggest hug ever. Okay? That builds security. Okay? But it's okay to acknowledge the fear. Okay? So we talked a little bit about praise and encouragement, positive cooperation. We talked about feelings and some boundaries. Are there any questions? I hope I haven't totally talked your ears off, but any questions?
Yes, it's for Hudson.
I think it's on a podcast. Oh. You know, it does work quite nicely, as long as it doesn't get too patronizing, I think. Honey, feel free to come sit by me after you've cleaned up your place. You can try it. Let me know how it works. Yeah. Well, thank you very much for having me. And
I did have a question.
Okay.
How, like when you started talking, you know, this isn't unfamiliar to me. I've heard it before. But I just don't remember it when you're...
In the moment?
...tired and have a child screaming and the lunch is getting on and it
yes.
needs to react.
Yes.
I react.
Yes.
I
think, first of all, it's baby steps. And second of all, knowing what your boundaries are and getting more in touch with, you know, sometimes it's about taking a step forward. You make a mistake and maybe you reflect on it and say, you know what? Like, we used to have really tough time between school ending and dinner beginning. So what can I do to try to make that transition easier in our family? Maybe I actually have to send both kids and say, you know what, let's all have some quiet time. You go to this place, you go to that place. Why don't you get your reading done or flip through a book or here's a sticker book or something. So maybe it's about trying to proactively prevent it, even though I know that you can't do that with lots of kids and lunch. And then, I mean, I've had those moments. The you know, political person's showing up at the door and your shrimp is frying and the dog's barking and you're supposed to have the neighbor girl home. I've totally had those. And you do. But the more you use it, the more it gets part of your language and you can spit it off like, feel free, you know, to continue watching your show when you step down from jumping on the couch, okay? And it becomes a natural part of who you are, okay? It's not going to work with babies. So babies are not going to listen to that language and say, okay, I'm going to hold my cry until you're ready for me, Mom. So sometimes it is a process. I know it's a difficult time when we have little ones and there's a lot going on at the same time. But don't be afraid to say, okay, Mommy needs a few minutes of quiet. It's getting a little crazy in here. Let me finish your lunch and then we can do this or that or address that. So you're trying to keep your language calm, first of all, even though it is getting a little chaotic. But maybe you have to say, and I've had to do that too, I need a few minutes. We'll address that in a moment. Okay, so you're teaching your kids a lot of different things there. How you are, how you need to be respected, some patience. Maybe they need patience. Maybe they're trying to like open something and they need you to do it right now. And you say, you know what, we can do that in a few minutes. Mommy's getting lunch prepared. Does that help? Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's a lot of pick a place to start. Like if it's the language piece or the getting clear on your boundaries, and start in that place and take baby steps.
And I guess then my next question would be, like, when you say the flight for yourself is almost not acceptable, how do you know
what is?
What isn't when it comes to, like, I know I feel for myself that I think I put too much expectations on my 3 and 4 year old. But I don't know if I am. Like, do I really expect my 3 year old to be quiet the entire time her sister's napping? And
I know.
Like, how do I know?
I know.
That I would think that by now my 4 year old would know what I mean when I say, can you please pick up your room or can you please pick up these?
Yeah.
What is,
I do a lot of, I know, because I struggle with that too. First of all, there's a couple options. We can always find mentors who have older kids, but I know that that's easier said than done. But that has helped me along the way as well. I have a friend who actually has 2 older kids and then 2 younger ones, and these girls are wonderful. So I go to her for advice, and I say, is this normal? The other thing I do is actually look at development books. There's a great series that's back from the 70s, which I would think, oh, that doesn't apply now. But I think it's Louise Ames, and she does your 1 year old, your 2 year old, your 3 year old. And sometimes I have to come back to those. Even after having my 7 year old go through the 4 year old stage, my 4 year old has a different temperament. So sometimes I have to go back to those books and say, just not too long ago, because 3 and 4 year olds, just so you know, I think it is like the toughest years. Now, I haven't hit teenage years yet, so let's say up until 12, I'm going to say those are some of the most challenging because they don't have self-control yet. Yes. They don't have self-control. And I want you to know, every single Love and Logic class that I've had, they said, yeah, but I tried this. How old's your kid? 4. And I just kind of chuckle because it's like every problem that anyone has with any technique, it's the 4 year olds and the 3 year olds who are going to push the limits the hardest. So it's going to be the most frustrating time for you, let's say until teenagerhood, I think.
It's no, it means I'm not losing it.
Yes. And I think what you need to know, and what helped me get through too, is I've seen my 7 year old go from, like, I bought strong-willed child, how do I deal with this, stubborn, blah, blah, blah. And I bought all those books, and I'm thinking, she went like this at age 6 and has just totally, like, she's shy, she's mellow, she's sweet, she wants to help, she'll eat her vegetables, for God's sakes. It's wonderful. So there's that hump, I think, of 3 and 4 is like it's like adolescence at a young age. And then they start to get into school and they have friends and all these other things start to develop. So know, first of all, that that's a very, very, very challenging age. And I had to even pull my books back out and say, okay, is this what a 4 year old's supposed to be doing? You know, because again, have the calm 7 year old, but now all of a sudden have this completely rambunctious 3- and 4-year-old, and my husband and I are just like, yeah! You know, because she'll set every limit, she's loud, she wants to sing, she da-da. So it's very intense for us. But you have to remember, okay, that's part of her development. And how can I label and praise and give her good things so that she's not fighting so hard for control? Give her lots of choices about things that aren't so important to you, but that she can make choices on and feel like, hey, I'm getting to be a big girl. I get to choose this or I get to choose that. And then know that it's going to get better. Does that help? Okay. Anything else? I need to let you guys go. But I'll be here if you have any questions that you want to talk one-on-one. Okay? Thank you.
Thank you.